Morning, everyone. Welcome to Fendering Cast 122. Interesting. I tried a new method of recording the show last night, potentially, in our garden, in a lovely little armchair sat out there. And it didn't quite seem to work. It didn't quite seem to flow. I almost needed the excitement and pressure of the team car and the commute. So, yeah, we're back in the car today for this show, which is kind of a belated Tour de France rest day wrap-up. Having listened to a lot of other pods and heard what's out there, obviously from our perspective, doing just a straightforward chat about stages is not necessarily anything different to what there is. So we're going to look at the races and overall rather than just as a small snippet on each stage. We'll talk about the things we've got right so far in terms of like the Sagan prediction for yellow, potentially Egan Bernal for the white, and gloss over the fact that we said Romain Bardet would win the yellow jersey. I mean, he could still win it, to be fair. He's started to show some shoots of recovery. So yeah, here we go. And before that, a couple of bits of local news that you may or may not have missed. The local Club 10 series are drawing to a close. The Hereward League ones that were held across the summer by Fenland, Peterborough, Spalding, Bourne, that concluded at Bourne's with Bourne's round a couple of weeks ago, which Fenland won, which I'll obviously mention being a member, even though I contributed to just like one round of the four. So well done to them. And well done to everyone, because the series itself, there was a lot of riders in each of the events that are all a 10-mile time trial format. Entry fees around £5. Lots of, you know, socialising, bonding, that kind of stuff. Fantastic occasion. So, well done. After a bit of, not questioning, but the Hereward series seemed to be slightly less popular in recent years, it's come back with a bang this year. So long may that continue. The other big piece of news is that another organisation that I've got quite strong links to, Yaxley Riders, is coming up to its 10th anniversary at the end of the year. I'm sure we'll cover this in a bit more detail as we get closer, but it's just one to put on your radar. Looking back, Steve Milne and I probably never thought quite what would happen when we decided to almost started out by forming a training ride, and that was it, a Tuesday night training ride that blossomed into something. It kind of launched at the time that we were getting good at cycling as a nation in Great Britain, and that the social media was starting to become used as a way of getting information out there. So hey, we can say we're groundbreaking. It certainly is a group and an organisation. It's had some ups and some downs, but it's still goes strong today. And even though neither Steve nor I live anywhere near Yaxley nowadays, I'm sure you know, he, like me, keeps an eye on affairs. And you know, not many cycling groups, as opposed to a club, because there's no membership taken, can boast, you know, the amount of training rides that they've put on, a guided ride to the Tour de France, trips to the Alps. There's not many organisations that have got that level of that level of interaction in there, certainly in the first 10 years of their existence. So yeah, interesting times ahead. On to the tour then, and the first week of the race, kind of taken as a whole, has been still a massive triumph for France. It's kind of been like a French / Jumbo benefit, but Ineos are still kind of there. They won't be disappointed with how the race has gone in the first 8 or 9 stages. So how have we got all of these massive time gaps and some people out of contention without hitting the Pyrenees or the Alps? Well, the answer's kind of been the Vosges. But before the race got to the Vosges, we had the Flanders days, which, I don't know, there's always something good and bad. I love seeing Flanders. I love, you know, the Muir and all of those kind of things. Do I enjoy seeing them in the summer when it's super warm and riders are in short sleeves? Not quite as good, really, is it? But in Mike Tournison, we had a good winner at the opening stage, and Jumbo dominated the time trial to kind of cement that and give themselves a great start to the race for, you know, the Krauswijks of this world. In terms of other excitement from the first week, we got Peter Sagan winning a stage, which took the pressure off him. Elia Viviani got his first Tour de France stage win, which took the pressure off him. So there's only really now kind of those big sprinters that kind of went expecting stage wins. We're only really now looking for Caleb Ewan to get a win, but there's not that many opportunities now, and you wonder whether he'll sort of hanker down, get through, if he doesn't win today, get through the next week or so and see where he's at, see where the other sprinters are at with regards to trying to get to Paris and win on the Champs-Élysées. So fingers crossed, you know, for him. It's not like Lotto have had a bad tour though. They've done all right for themselves. And in terms of breakaway action, the first week has been full of it. Quite a lot of it with Jan Frodeno, who got in quite a few breaks last year, even ended up on his own for quite a long time because no one wanted to get in the break. And after he criticised the whole of the rest of the Tour de France for that last year, he was always going to get some company this year. He did. He was off the front for a few days, then he got sick, and now the story of the Tour has been his Lanterne Rouge and the fact that he's struggling off the bat. Only in cycling, though, would you get, you know, riders from rival teams sort of hanging back to try and ensure that he gets there ahead of the time limit. So, well done to Lars Bak and Rick Zabel, I think it was, riders from Dimension Data and Katusha, who have got pressures of their own to try and be at the front of the race, but they were good enough to stick with Alfredo and help him through his troubles. Let's see whether the rest days helped him out and whether a slightly easier stage today will give him a better chance. So he's been involved in a lot of breakaways. Earlier on, Tim Wellens, he was doing particularly well in mountain, hoovering up mountain points, so much so that he got a custom polka dot Ridley, which either makes you think that's super confident or that, you know, Ridley's factory was particularly flexible to his order. You don't know. He's been in breaks with, of course, Thomas de Gendt, who is the serial breakaway artiste, shall we say. He kind of picked a couple of breakaways that didn't particularly do so well in terms of getting to the finish. One that did was Julian Alaphilippe, who kind of popped the champagne before he got to the finish, to use a cliche, and looked fairly dominant on the short, sharp hills. Everyone held their breath. The yellow jersey was France's. What could he do on the Planche de Belfi? All things being equal, he would have retained the jersey on Planche de Belfi. But Giulio Ciccone, who animated the Giro by waving his arms around a lot and getting angry with everyone in breakaways, he actually kind of knuckled down, and despite his disappointment, hilarious disappointment at not winning the stage, losing out to Flemish star Dylan Teuns, he actually just about hung on to get the yellow jersey. And that was good for Trek, because Richie Porte hadn't exactly illuminated the race with his presence to date, so it was good for Trek to get a jersey, and almost you feel there's a little bit less pressure on them now to deliver as the race goes on. Because I still don't see Porte being a contributing factor as we go through the mountains. Ciccone only lasted a day in yellow because a crash to Geraint Thomas saw the race lit up late on. You'd got a breakaway, of course, Thomas de Gendt was in it, away at the front of the race. But then Alaphilippe, with these bonus seconds at the top of the last climb of the day on certain stages, Alaphilippe fancied those. He went after them. Thibaut Pinot himself went after Alaphilippe. And you had a fantastic combine of French riders, something we predicted in the podcast. We said that we felt the French riders could get together to try and ensure that, you know, a British rider didn't win their race again. And that looked fairly likely at that point, because they sped up to the extent where they nearly caught Thomas de Gendt. It was only a few seconds in hand for the Belgian towards the end of the stage, which thankfully, from a neutral's perspective, he held on. And from the race's perspective, the breakaway of Pinot and Alaphilippe gained a few seconds. All looked well. We looked like we were heading into the rest day in a good position, in a very good position, with the race fantastically poised, and in terms of the leading contenders, it would be a Frenchman. And that, you know, Ineos seemed happy. They got no pressure. Alaphilippe was happy. He'd got the jersey. Pinot was happy. He'd got a little bit of time on his rivals, but wasn't in the yellow jersey, so therefore not able to control the whole race and all the breakaways and ins and outs. So it looked a fairly positive picture as we went into that last stage before the rest day. But boy, did things change on that last few kilometres. It was EF who kicked it off, sensing some crosswind opportunities and trying to put their man for the GC. Rigoberto Urán in a strong position. They actually then got blown away by an Ineos, Bora and Quickstep led attack. They actually made better use of the crosswinds, and suddenly, in terms of the GC, we saw Pinot out the back, we saw Urán out the back, we saw Port out of the back. We were in a position where a lot of the riders that were out of the contention potentially by, you know, well over a minute. Pinot's rest day press conference, he seemed to have taken it fairly badly, whereas his DS Marc Madiot was saying that it's still a battle. It was very reminiscent of the Kevin Keegan I'd love it speech, to be fair. You hope that he's right, and you hope that Pinot's morale hasn't folded. When Pinot said, oh, we didn't deserve to lose time, well, of course you did. You weren't positioned right when a crosswind came, and you need to be aware and awake even on a flat stage. The Tour's won as much on flat as it is now on the mountains, and you know, it's a naive way of looking at it. One person who did make the right side of the split, apart from Bernal and Thomas, was of course Romain Bardet, who from being, you know, well out of contention is now still quite a long way from contention, but in a position where, you know, he's a minute or so closer, certainly to the top 10 positions and the Pinots and the Urans of this world. So whether that's the start of a comeback for him or whether it's just a case of he was in the right place at the right time, we don't know. Going under the radar, and also in that front group, was Quintana, who we tipped for the King of the Mountains, but I'm not convinced that that's going to be an acceptable byproduct for him now. I think he is still going to be trying to go for the yellow jersey, and I think he probably still believes that he's got enough to get it. His team time trial losses were about a minute, but not too bad. And you look at it now, and having said that, like a lot of people, that we agreed that the crashes, the form, the winter excess, the previous record of how Bradley Wiggins is didn't even get to defend his Tour and that kind of stuff, how that all played out, but we didn't necessarily feel Thomas would be the man to go back to back. Now you'd have to say he's in a fairly strong position. We've still got to get through that last week of multiple 2,000 plus metres ascensions, and you would look at Colombian riders and think that they've got a little bit more to offer than maybe, you know, a Welshman in that particular regard. But then you could also say that the Colombians would benefit more than even the French riders. But we shall see. I mean, there is the school of thought that Bardet at 3 minutes, not that I'm labouring the point, of course, but Bardet at 3 minutes, that's a couple of stages worth of work to wipe out. And if Pinot's going well in the mountains and he can get his head together, then, you know, you'd look at him and say that, OK, it's a minute or so deficit, but he could get that back fairly easily on a stage. So the Tour is by no means over, even though I think people are starting to, you know, hanker down and think, here we go again. I'm still not convinced an Ineos rider will win it. And, you know, we will have to see how that pans out. So, fingers crossed, we're in for as exciting a second week as we were the first week. Because so far, despite always getting loads of criticism and stuff in every race, the course designers seem to have done a job. They seem to have ensured that there are opportunities in each stage. There's racing till the finish. These bonus seconds on climbs rather than intermediate sprints seems to have worked its way, you know, into the benefit of the racing. And certainly for, you know, the sort of rider like Alaphilippe, he is taking the maximum advantage of what he's got in terms of his abilities and in terms of what the course is offering him in terms of short, sharp climbs with a descent near the finish and bonus second opportunities. And I suppose the key thing now that people are starting to talk about is how deep can Alaphilippe go in terms of this, you know, race for the yellow jersey? Will he be satisfied to get to the Pyrenees, sit up and, you know, try and prepare for the Worlds in Yorkshire on a course that would make him almost like an outright favourite? So the answer to that, I suppose, is no one knows. But where he's at in this position and the cushion that he's got over everyone else, not just, you know, Pinos and Bardets and Urans and stuff, he's still got a healthy minute plus lead over Geraint Thomas. He's got to keep going for now. He's not going to give the jersey up easily or without a battle. And you wonder now whether, you know, he could be a bit more than a Thomas Voerkelaer in terms of his defence of the jersey. And for the sake of the race and for, you know, the excitement, I think you've got to hope that Alaphilippe, if he's still in the yellow jersey this time next week, then boy, will we have a Tour de France on our hands, because the others will suddenly have to, they'll have to really rethink how they're going to go about winning this Tour. So it's going to be good. Fascinating stuff upcoming. The real mountainous stuff still to come. But how brilliant were the Vosges? How fantastic was the Planche de Belfie? You know, we covered the fact that Turns won the stage, but we didn't talk about the crowds on that climb, the fantastic excitement, even the addition of the gravel in the final kilometre. People saying it was a gimmick and trying to imitate, you know, a Strada Bianchi or a Trobro Leon. But actually, you know, you look at the duel between Alaphilippe and Geraint Thomas in that last kilometre of gravel. It was fantastic, you know. And it's always annoys me, I think, in a way, that when you watch the Tour on TV, the climbs don't look anywhere near as steep as they actually do when you're trying to haul your bike up them. And whereas that last bit of the Planche de Belfie, the camera angles that were used, you were in no doubt that this was a fantastically hard, difficult and challenging mountain. And that's brilliant, because that's what you want to get across on television. So we'll look to do another wrap. This time next week, I would envisage. Keep following us, doing all the things you do. We're not as desperate as some organisations to get likes and things, because we've not got sponsors to satisfy. So it doesn't mean we don't want your correspondence, doesn't mean we don't want you to share us, like us, and do all of the things that other people do. It's just not, you know, essentially, if you're listening and it's good content, then that's all we want. In terms of predictions now, would it be wise of us to try and adjust our predictions? I don't think we should. So, you know, in terms of what I think is going to happen in the next week, I think we could see more French riders trying to get away, maybe together. I think we, hopefully, at some point, we'll get to the situation where if one Frenchman attacks, another one doesn't chase him down. Clearly, the thought that there was Alaphilippe and Pinot were riding together looked likely one day when they clearly did ride together to get away. Certainly wasn't the case, you know, the next day when Alaphilippe put the knife into Pinot by driving away those echelons in the crosswinds. Because you would have thought if they were working together for the greater good of a French Tour de France win, that he would have, you know, tipped Pinot the wink and said, "Oi, you know, we're going for this. We're going to rip it up. Make sure you're on the right side." And maybe we're naive enough to think that those sort of things don't happen in cycling. They clearly, you know, they do. But, you know, to what end, what benefit? Maybe Alaphilippe, and that's the first time actually that I thought, you know what, maybe Alaphilippe's riding for Alaphilippe and he's not interested in in Pinot or Bardet or helping anyone else out. He maybe thinks he can go further and deeper in this yellow jersey and could actually contribute to winning the Tour de France himself. Who knows? We shall see. And by the next time we speak, we'll obviously have a much clearer picture of how that is going to pan out. So that's all for now. We will be back in a week or so's time. Thank you very much for listening. Take care.